right and the left. That's correct, you are.
Because you're living on a line. It's a linear expansion in this direction and the other one. It has infinite length but infinitesimal girth. Timeline Earth, only one dimension for you to meet your friends.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, please, come to the table, please, everybody, gather around. We've got an episode to record, for Christ's sake. I decided, no, Aaron, you decided, Aaron, yep, that you wanted to watch, and you texted The Big Show today, and so we went to a Denny's, because we don't have a TV in the crack house, and I think
where did it go?
I think for the
we had one. When did we lose that?
I wonder.
Yeah. There was a feverish period where Aaron was ripping out basically everything in the studio, and I have to imagine that at some point therein
had to go.
The TV was gone regardless. We ended up here at a Denny's to record an episode rather than in our studio.
Right. Watch the TV. I wanted to see if they were going to riot. And it seems like we'll get into that. And it seems like perhaps things will turn for the better. But I'll tell you what, Carr, our lady hasn't gotten here yet to take our orders. But I am dying for a moon over my hammy. I'm going to get one of those. What are you getting?
I'm going to get a Grand Slam, which.
Love a Grand Slam. Witch.
I'm getting Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. I love it. It's great stuff. I can't wait until she gets here. Hopefully they get here soon.
You might as well make the best of it when we're at a Denny's. You might as well make the best of it.
You know they have So you see this, Carr? You see this syrup here? What is that?
Boysenberry?
Boysenberry. Do you know that doesn't exist?
Boysenberry?
You know those don't exist? Look it up.
Well, they do here.
Boysenberry. You're going to get a very suspicious article. Basically says it's a European raspberry. Get out of here. That's not real. There's no such thing as a boysenberry. Look it up on real sourced website.
Very large.
They made it up.
Bramble fruit. Considered
it's
to be
not
a
real fruit.
Variety of
syrup.
Blackberry. Okay.
It's not real.
Yeah.
Don't use this.
Yeah.
Don't put that on your pancakes. It's going to ruin your whole thing. It's a real.
Regardless.
I brought the corkboard with us.
Saw that. Yeah, we kind of made ourselves at home here, didn't we?
Well, what are they going to do? Stop us?
That's true.
We're armed.
Yeah.
Yep.
And crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why they haven't taken our order yet.
If I don't get my chocolate milk, there's going to be another shooting.
Oh boy.
Wait, garçon, chocolate milk, please. Thank you. Jesus Christ, I know it takes so hard to get some help over here at a Denny's. So yeah, I figured this would be an interesting place for us to sit down and discuss the news, hear the verdict, maybe on the TV. Antifa, I hear, is saying no matter what the verdict is, we're going to riot. That sounds fun.
Dedication.
Mm-hmm. It's good.
We'll be watching that. This particular Denny's, I think, is probably will be all right here for a little while, but we may want to vacate before 10 p.m. But I think here's the cork board.
Got it.
Carr, hold that cork board for me
across
the table.
Let me just, here.
What the hell
all right.
do we have on this cork board here? There were a lot of weird things that did happen this week besides the main topic of the event. Actually, let's just get the elephant in the Denny's. Let's get it out of the way. Were you watching with bated breath to see whether or not the city of Minneapolis would be set on fire this evening, Carr Campbell? How were you feeling
Frankly,
about it?
I was.
Really?
Yeah, I was. I was, you know, I had it in the background. We had it on in the background here at the Denny's. And I was very curious to see which way this one was going to go.
I don't know. It seems like we got the verdicts. Guilty, guilty, guilty. 100% there's going to be an appeal on the second degree murder charge. probably because of Maxine Water inciting violence and partially because of the large crowds inciting violence. But the third degree is probably going to stick. I don't know what that means as far as convictions. But, yeah, that's that's like out in 1 year, out of all the police killings that have occurred, what is that? One out of a couple hundred?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right? Certainly.
We're not even like.
Yeah, certainly seems to.
We're not even like in the middle of spring yet.
Yeah, we're not. Yeah. It's out of control, right? The numbers are going. It's like worse than COVID.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long, hot summer again.
You know what's weird? I don't understand how you can be guilty of all three of those things at the same time.
Like, I don't listen.
Yeah.
I don't know the law, my man.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
I don't know how to see. That's the thing is, everybody's like, "Yeah, justice," and I'm like, "Well, in your way, but in general, the justice system is a understandable conglomerate of craziness. This is not justice. It's not really. It's just the outcome happened to be the one you liked this time." But calling the whole thing justice is a little, it's a little much.
Right. Yeah, yeah, ease back on that, ease back on that.
You just take it easy. You got one out of like 500. Actually, Aaron, you got your cell phone on you over there? You're using the charger over there. You have that? Can you do me a favor? Google police killings 2021. Do we have a number on that?
Yeah, I'm Googling it on my Cricket phone right now.
Okay, let's take a look. Yeah, that Cricket cell. Let's hear it. I like the idea that as the Cricket phone loads, there's just a cricket that runs in a circle in the middle of the phone, powering the phone. Yeah. It's got to be, Carr, if you had to take a guess, it is 4/21, a fantastic day, as it is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
And I would like to, and I'm glad we're at Denny's because it's one of my favorite eating establishments for this occasion. But it's a great day. And I think by 4/21, this day of recording, we have to have at least 400 people killed by police. Car, you?
Wait, this year since January 1st?
Yes.
I don't know if it's that much.
It might be. I might be overestimating. Yeah, I might.
I'm gonna cut it in half. I'm gonna say 200.
200. All right. Okay.
You're gonna need to get your calculator out for this because I have it by month for 2021.
Okay.
Okay, I'll get the calculator. All right, I got the calculator. All right, let's hear it.
So in January, according to Statista.com, people shot to death by U.S. police by month 2017 to 2021.
Okay.
So in 2021, in January, we have 78.
Oh, boy.
As opposed to last year, which was 88.
Okay.
Oh.
And then in February, we have 86, as opposed to last year,
man,
which is 78.
I'm doing pretty decent here, Carr.
And then here's the kicker.
Yeah, you are. Jeez.
Now, these statistics were taken as of March 28th, so the end of March. Uh-huh. Now, as of March 28th, there was 49 people shot to death, as opposed to 2020, which had 93.
So it is less than last year. It trends down so far. It trends down so far. So it's 213. Carr, you're close.
Closest without going over.
Okay, that's pretty good. All right, so there you go.
That's good enough for government work.
213. Man, really? How many people a month do you think this podcast could kill and get away with?
It depends on depends on what phase of the struggle I'm in.
5 to 10, maybe. Sure. Oh boy, this is what a misery. What a giant misery. Well, that's out of the way. Good little mathematics class for us, everybody. Hey, here's the waiter. Hi. Let me just give a moon over my hand, please.
I'll just do a grand slam and a cup of coffee.
Take some black coffee to start off with, let me look.
Oh, ooh. Jesus, we've been sitting here for 30 minutes already. Yeah.
I know, I know. I'm sorry. Look, I'll take. What do they got? Ooh, Denny's has burgers? All right, I'll take a America's Diner Double. I'll take a bacon avocado.
That's a lot of meat.
I'll take a bourbon bacon.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of meat.
And I'll try that Beyond Burger. It's probably going to give me tits and estrogen, but I'll try it.
balance you out.
Yeah. Oh, and chocolate milk as well.
Yeah, a chocolate milk, please.
Please don't forget
three
that chocolate milk, or we're going to be in
a
world of hurt over here.
Thank you, sweetheart. All right. How are we paying for this?
Hey, I ordered all that so that we'd have some left over, and I thought we were just going to fucking dine and dash.
Okay, good.
Dine
that's
and dash?
That's what I figured. Yeah, okay. It's a Denny's. Yeah. Who cares? Listen, everybody's out there looting and burning buildings down. They can afford one moon over my hammy under the table. Jeez.
And Denny's basically has their own credit system. I mean, they're basically out here printing money anyway.
You know that, right? That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Do you know about that? Yeah. There is a Denny's Bucks system that is 100% fiat, and they print and give it out. Like, you know that skit from It's Always Sunny where they try and figure out how a centralized banking system works? You can all Google this. It's like called Denny Bucks or something. It is 100% like a Bretton Woods agreement style money system in Denny's, and it's really weird. You should look into it. It's very strange. That's real, 100% real. I found that out because my grandfather, who went to Denny's probably every 3 days, he used to go to Denny's. This man,
wow,
and he told me once about that, and I have literally never forgotten it at all. So, yeah, that's the case. I had a listener question come up that I wanted to put out there.
Oh, I don't want to hear it.
Well,
let's entertain.
Going to have to.
Yeah.
So, it was a question about, so there was a video that went around on TikTok recently of a young lady wearing a dress. And the young lady was complaining about how when she wears the dress, it reveals too much of her cleavage. I didn't believe she had a very ample amount of cleavage, but that is besides the point. It reveals a large amount of cleavage, and she said that she felt that she couldn't wear the dress confidently because men would gawk at her in public. And I responded to this, and I said, yeah, I get this a lot. Ladies usually look at my shelf of an ass in the supermarket, and it's a real am I on blast kind of a moment. And there was a question that was fielded. Hey, next on TLE, you should get into what birdwatching actually means for one of our hosts and why it's his greatest burden. So... I was wanting to ask you gentlemen, you know, Childeberg is coming up, White Boy Summer is coming up. I found this was a good way to get us to segue into it. There's been a lot of controversy over various types of clothing that have been allowed and have not been allowed during White Boy Summer. And one of them was, if you'll remember, salmon colors and khaki shorts. Two things which together produce a very high power level, but apparently we can't wear that. Those shorts, they give off a great curvature in the rear end, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what I was thinking was, if the ladies on the internet are trying to weaponize the sundress, goth girl fall, and all these things, I think we should start weaponizing, you know, our
salmon
figures.
Shorts. Yeah, sure.
Yes.
I'm in.
Boom. You got it. Right there. Right there.
So,
because so you know how in Rhodesia, you ever see photos in like the 1950s in Rhodesia, all those boys clowning around in South Africa?
Yeah,
and they
dude.
Would wear those tiny,
tiny,
practically tiny shorts.
Combat shorts.
I mean, combat shorts. Savannah cruising shorts. What I'm suggesting is that we bring those to Childeberg and we rock those.
Wow.
Because the power level would be infinite, I think.
Yeah, it would certainly...
Dress up as Rhodesians.
Yeah, that would be wild.
Dude, let's go. Please, let's go to Childeberg dressed up as Rhodesians. All right, where's the party here?
That would be... that would certainly that would put the white in White Boy Summer, that's for sure. That would make a, certain...
Yeah, sure
that
would.
That would certainly make a statement, I would say.
Yeah, that would show you... Yeah, now that I'm rethinking the scenario, but I'm not rethinking the Rhodesian shorts. And so that is my... It is my counter-suggestion to the gentleman... Both heading to Childeberg and not, if you want to weaponize, you know, your opponent's eyes, you know, in a distraction form, just as is done with the sundress, get yourself some hot pants, some short shorts, and rock them out, and don't even think about shaving your legs. Don't even think about trimming the leg hair. Let it go as jungle like as you possibly can. And wear it with pride, and we win. I think we would win if that was the case. Mm-hmm. Are we in on this?
Yeah.
Strategy number two.
Combat short shorts.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else. That's it.
Yeah. And
fine with me.
If you want to really weaponize it, maybe have the fly down and maybe like a nut hanging out.
Cool.
One nut? One?
Wow.
Yeah, just one nut.
Wow. Interesting. Man, we're coming up with a lot of good things here.
Well, take a look.
The final piece on this board that I want to talk to you guys about before we get into perhaps some interesting things you've seen as of recent, Carr, I believe we have some Bitcoin things to discuss, for instance. But I put a poll out on Twitter, which has finalized during the recording of this episode. And I just wanted to bring it up to the two of you. I don't know if you've been hawking this poll or not, but... So I know, me and Aaron are good friends, despite the kayfabe that we put on. We're good friends. We talk about a lot of things. I know a lot of his secrets. And I decided that, you know, Aaron, a man of many mysteries and secrets, you could reveal a few and still know nothing about the guy. So I decided what would be the most interesting fact about Aaron that I could put out there in a poll form to see which one was the most surprising to our listeners. And in order... of least surprising to most surprising. And you can imagine I pumped my fist when this was the least surprising. He's 41.
Wow.
Is the least surprising fact about Aaron.
Surprising.
I'm just really cruising funny into middle age.
It was really good. Like that one. The second least surprising was that he speaks fluent Portuguese. Do you think that that's because, Aaron, you were in the Navy and people assume... that you would have an expertise in a foreign language like that?
Worldly man.
I think they just assume that, you know, I hire a lot of migrant workers to do landscaping. Uh-huh. And maybe,
fair.
You know,
Portuguese
fix up
migrants.
House a little bit, clean up.
Yeah.
Because God knows that I'm not going to do it. So it would behoove me to know the language of the people that I employ under the table.
Wow. That's very cosmopolitan of you in a way I didn't expect. That's very grown up. Wow. Very good. The second most surprising thing about you, which I found this to be perhaps the second least surprising, but it is the second most surprising about you, is that you are bisexual.
Huh.
So that took people by surprise. I thought that this would have been an obvious one. Aaron, what do you feel about that? Don't you think you've communicated this?
Yeah,
enough?
I mean, we had that whole episode about the hottest presidents and the naughtest. Yeah.
Right. Well, Aaron, we had the whole Patreon episode where you came out. To us, and we were like, we know, yeah, buddy, it's all good.
We support you.
Yeah. I like, you know, any port in a storm. I mean, I'm down to fuck.
There you go. That's that's why we admire you. And finally,
another cosmopolitan feature.
Yeah, very much so. And here's the most cosmopolitan feature, which was also the most surprising, perhaps, was that you were born in Uganda.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So that is... So in order, again, of least to most, he's 41, he speaks fluent Portuguese, he's bisexual, he was born in Uganda. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, he's a 41-year-old bisexual Ugandan man who speaks fluent Portuguese.
A man of the world.
You know, growing up as a small child in Kampala, I can tell you that life isn't easy, and it informed a lot of my personality right now.
Which side of the Rhodesian Bush War will you be dressing up as, Aaron?
No, actually, I don't want the answer to that one. Yeah. Let's move forward.
Yeah. Obviously, the Marxists.
I love that you are calling them the Marxists. Very clever of you. That's an N by any other name, isn't it?
Oh, man, poetic.
Yeah. All right. Well, here you go. It explains your love of the sea and the fact that Kampala, as you stated, your birthplace is near, of course, Lake Victoria, beautiful oceanic reserve, the mouth of the Nile, in fact. So, yeah, a lot of history there. Aaron, you're a man of very interesting persuasions, and it's great to have you here in this Denny's. So thanks for being a part of the show. Carr, next week I'm thinking about doing some interesting facts about you.
Okay.
And then perhaps a week after that we'll do some interesting facts about me. And then we'll see whose facts were the most surprising overall.
And most factual.
Because I think the people want to get to know a lot about us. And we owe it to them, right? So we'll get to that.
Cool.
Now, as we wait for our food, Carr, I would like us to pivot into something more serious. Actually, a few relatively serious topics. besides the fact that this Denny's potentially by 10 p.m. could be on fire, the more important thing is how do we pick up after the fires finish, and a new monetary system perhaps would be a good way to do that. So I'd like to talk to you about Bitcoin and several weird things that are going on in Bitcoin. I want to talk about the environmental shit. And, Carr, what was it that you had said you have to mention and talk about?
Oh,
we could do either one. Take your pick.
Trigi had tagged me and wanted an explanation on the downward trend of liquidity in Bitcoin. I figured I would mention a few words on that.
Okay. It's quite technical, it seems. Please.
It's not that technical, actually. So basically what's happening, so this data is from a Twitter account called Glassnode, and it's a pay-for service, but they publish some of their stuff to just kind of tease people to come in and buy their services. But a lot of it is basically just like tracking trends of more of the technical or network trends of cryptocurrencies, particularly Bitcoin. And what they have been tracking recently, or one of the more popular ones they've been tracking that gets a lot of attention and retweets, is the liquidity or available supply of Bitcoin. And but they make a specific reference to the available supply being basically like Bitcoin up for sale, not Bitcoin in cold storage. So basically Bitcoin on exchanges or Bitcoin that's moving a lot. I don't know exactly where they draw the line on that, but it has been in a steep decline for quite some time. It's under 2.5 million at this point. Bitcoins are actually available for purchase. And, so, you know, as you can imagine, as the supply declines, and demand increases, you know, what's going to happen. And, you know, I had been alluding to earlier, when we were talking about like GME stock and stuff like that, the Bitcoin infinity squeeze, where it at some point people are just going to realize, holy shit, I am very short Bitcoin, and there's just not any for sale, you know, relative to the global supply or demand or global supply. So that's kind of what that was. So, you know, just this chart showing that a steep decline in available Bitcoins on exchanges. And my guess is, you know, and this is also going to lead into what are exchanges willing to do to satisfy the demand, and it could lead into some attack vectors like kind of attempting fractional reserve and things like that. So it's very important to run your own nodes.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask. Oh, I was going to say, so what's the implications of it?
I
seems like that's the implications of it.
It could be, you know, one implication is the price is probably going to go up because there's a very little circulating supply available. And as demand rises, that's the natural implication. But then the other part is that more and more of these exchanges are starting to allow you to purchase Bitcoin, but not withdraw it. Mm. So I think Venmo is the most recent one to allow you to purchase Bitcoin. You know, payment service that's now, but I don't believe you're allowed to withdraw. So you're basically
ever.
I think that's the deal. So
you're buying Venmo coin.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah. So, what is that even? How can they? Is the only reason they can call it Bitcoin is because nobody owns that?
Well,
trademark.
Theoretically, theoretically, they have the Bitcoin, right? And you
how?
Well, they
how so?
They've purchased it.
Oh, so you're okay. So they say simple numbers here.
Yes.
They got a 10,000 Bitcoin, whatever. Simple number. Don't think about the actual value of that. I have no idea right now. Yep. But 10,000 Bitcoin, and they say, and they have purchased that. Mining pools have confirmed it. They actually have that amount.
Yep.
But now you're saying they would be selling more than the 10,000.
It totally depends.
Is that right?
It totally depends. So I don't know what they're going to do. But what I'm saying is that this sets up a scenario where there's going to be great temptation to do so. So right now, theoretically, if all players are playing above board, what's happening is if you go into Venmo and you buy one Bitcoin, they're going out onto the open market and buying a Bitcoin and storing it in their and then putting your name on it, you know, saying this belongs to Bird. But with more and more of these exchanges that are not allowed, but you can never withdraw it. That's apparently. So that
and that's the caveat for Venmo, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, and I think Robinhood's the same way.
If you can't withdraw it, can you then sell it?
Yes, I think you can sell it.
Like, what are your options?
Yeah, I think you can sell it. I think you can send.
You can just hold it or sell it.
You can send it to other people with a Venmo account, probably.
That's so weird. I like the debate that you can have around that. I mean, very clearly to me, you do not own a Bitcoin if that's the case.
Correct.
But it's an interesting, because to me, Bitcoin and custody are the same thing. Like, you can't have Bitcoin unless you have custody of Bitcoin.
Yes, I agree.
You agree with that, Carr? That makes sense. So it's very, I can't imagine, this is like one of those things where NFTs are getting very popular now, and I look and I go, why? Like, what's the, what, and you know what I mean? And I see it and I go, I know about this, and I'm no smart guy about cryptocurrency. I'm, in fact, quite stupid about it compared to how many people I know who are better. And I could tell you, not to get onto NFTs, but that doesn't make sense. And so it seems like this doesn't make sense, and I feel like now two times I'm right about how it doesn't make sense, but a lot of people are still super into it.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Well, I would say that this actually makes more sense than NFTs. NFTs don't make any sense to me, but at least theoretically, I would say this, that it at least in the short run gives you exposure to Bitcoin price action. So, like, I mean, if you have
so when you buy a Bitcoin, they are charging you the amount that a Bitcoin on the market is going for.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, you theoretically, you have a Bitcoin contract, is basically what you have. You have a contract for a Bitcoin.
Right, you don't own it, but you gotta, the government at some point should step in and give it to you if they don't want to give it to you, kind of a deal.
Right,
like,
yeah, theoretically.
You might be able to get it.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, that's not, you know, most people, the mainstream would say, no, you own that, because they legally sold it to you. The conspiratorial Bitcoiner in me says, I wouldn't count on actually owning that. They may credit you.
No, I mean,
you know,
right, exactly.
But they
the fact
not.
Of the matter is, if they have to pay you in Bitcoin and they are giving even a 10,001 Bitcoins, then they can't, they're going to give you fiat for the amount they can't give you. Even if they had to surrender the Bitcoin physically, which they never do.
Yeah.
Yeah, it could be fake and gay.
Yeah, it could be fake and gay, which is why you should be...
Do not buy any amount of Bitcoin
and
from
wherever
Venmo.
You get it, make sure that you can withdraw it. And make sure that you verify it with your own node and hold the private keys yourself.
Is there perhaps a podcast, Carr, where people could learn about things like private nodes from a source that they trust and a voice
None
that they
existence.
Really like?
I'm so glad you asked.
Is there anything like that?
You could start with getting started in Bitcoin on my podcast, my solo podcast, The Signal.
Wow. What episode number is that? Because, you know, you did that thing, of course, where you messed up all the episode numbers, and I was... There's a fucking
Never
what
heard
episode
of
number exactly are we talking about there, Carr Camping?
Did I mess up the
I
episode?
Don't know. Yeah, I don't know, because there was one and then two and then three all on the same day, and it's like now I don't know where the numbers are. So what number is the one you're talking about? Is that
I think it's episode
is
four.
Is that four? But that was your second week of releases, but it's number four. Second month of releases, yeah, right. Yeah. But four. It's weird how it's crazy how math happens that way. Crazy stuff.
Hey, speaking of solo podcasts, I have another challenge just to our Timeline Earth listeners.
Okay. Am I going to have to mark the time down
Once
here?
Once again, if you are the 13th and the 50th person to DM me the N-word,
oh boy,
you will be a guest on Boys Town with Aaron next month on the third Friday.
Wow.
Thank God our food is here. Thank you,
now,
ma'am.
What is
just
the
give
significance
me
the
moon in
50?
Miami is mine, please. Give me the moon over Miami. Thank you, ma'am. Please get out of here before he keeps talking.
That fucking that waitress looks like somebody. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. She looks like Rachel Dolezal. Is that who you're trying to
Yeah.
All right, well,
like spitting image.
All right, well, maybe we'll hold off on the contest.
She's a white
hold
woman.
Off on the contest maybe until she finishes putting down your orange juice.
Maybe
please.
She can tell us.
Maybe. Mm. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, honey. Please ignore. We're just having a good time here. Thanks. Bye. Jesus. God. All right. 13 and 50. God knows what those numbers mean. I'm certainly not trying to find out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. There's your contest. So now as we feast, Carr. This is the exact phrase, because I can't think of a better phrase, so I just keep repeating it. The very obvious and boring move by the, God, I'm going to use the word, cathedral. I used it, guys. Yeah. I used it.
Oh, my God, he's alt-right.
The moose noise is going on. We're alt-right. We're an alt-right podcast. Alt-right, neo-reactionary, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the very obvious move by the cathedral is because the idea that Bitcoin and the larger, of course, cryptocurrency, but of course Bitcoin, because it has first mover, is also going to be first shitted. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin is being focused on in a new form and fashion. Before, they tried to say, you know, only drug dealers and child traffickers use this stuff, right? And that didn't work because literally nerds use it.
Yes.
So that was not persuasive.
The nerd defense.
The new, more persuasive, and I think everybody in the crypto community, and I would not classify myself that way because, again, I don't know enough about it to get head into it. But I can feel the wind blowing. And the very obvious and boring move by the cathedral community is the environmentalist angle against Bitcoin, which maybe, spoiler alert, is a myth, but we can get into the what they're seeing if you want. But that now this is the new angle to attack Bitcoin and the larger cryptocurrency thing, which is, again, finally, both obvious and very boring. Carr, do you find it more obvious or more very boring?
More boring, I would say.
More boring.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Aaron, what about you? More obvious or more very boring?
I would say it's an obvious tactic. It's just boring by nature because all their tactics
very
are.
Very boring. So I have been cursory, and Carr, I feel like you're going to have to lead this one, but I'm going to take you into the context of what I've seen over the past week. Maybe you, knowing your history of Bitcoin, can give me a larger picture of it, or if you've also seen this and what you think. But I have, for the past, I think it seems like over the past 2 months, really around the time NFTs started to become a thing, the larger conversation had to happen because, of course, now the art community is involved in, like, blockchain as an idea. So the art community interests have to come in to try and usurp that.
Sure, sure.
One of those being... and the environment. And what I've seen over the past 2 months is that there's a particular collective of bleeding hearts who are turning their sights towards the problem with cryptocurrency mining and the insane amount of energy that it uses and how it's going to bring us all to a very quick heat death. So the one thing that I know is that the minute that we hit the 21 million number, this dramatically environmental output dramatically decreases. But that's all I know. So now, Carr.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, I don't think the quote unquote environmental impact will stop at 21 once 21 million are distributed, because hopefully there's more and more mining incentivized to keep coming online due to transaction fees. So I actually think that the power, the energy that goes into Bitcoin, I don't know. I think it'll probably be more like an S curve. So it probably will taper at some point or flatten out. It's here to stay. And
wow, I'm surprised about that. See, I was under, and I had even read articles about it, that it's certainly the impression that once there is all that can be mined is mined, like a vast majority of the energy usage goes down.
No.
So is that incorrect?
Yeah. Yeah, I would think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Because you would still need the miners to mine the next block, regardless of whether, there's a block subsidy or not. So,
okay. All right. So down, they got, then energy has to be tackled. Like, they'd have to change energy to make it cleaner. It has nothing to do with
Bitcoin. I think that Bitcoin is going to drive that, actually. I think Bitcoin is going to be.
So please tell me about that.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've read up on it. But I mean, by and large, when you create a market for energy that's that efficient, you're going to, broadly speaking, entrepreneurs are going to seek to minimize inputs to maximize outputs. And so you're going to see a space race for the most efficient energy production available. I think that's probably going to be some sort of nuclear, and profit will incentivize people to move to it. I mean, that's just the That's Yeehaw. Just it. I mean, I don't see any other way around it.
So you actually think well, this is kind of what I was complaining about it the other day in the GC mm-hmm. that the same people who oppose Bitcoin because it's destroying the environment, first of all, don't make the same statement about the Chase Bank down the block.
Right.
But also, they are also afraid of nuclear, which clears out the issue completely.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and
very strange.
Excuse me. I think nuclear in the hands of incompetent governments is a little bit frightening, frankly. I mean, nuclear plants in the hands of people whose literal life investment is made on that nuclear plant in order to mine Bitcoin blocks for profit, they have a lot of incentive for it not to go down, you know?
Right.
So right. You know, it aligns incentives. Does it mean that no accident can ever happen? No, but I mean, I think that it's one of those things that, I mean, shit, if the Soviet Union can have plant, and now granted they had one, you know, absolute disaster, but, I believe they were running other nuclear plants. If they can, if a bureaucracy as incompetent as the Soviet Union can run the nuclear plant, I think that
Childeberg can,
yeah,
we'll get our own.
Yeah, sure.
Fuck it. And get our own little one.
Yeah.
Right? So you're running a full node.
A bunch of nerds.
And you're running your own power source.
Uranium.
Yeah. See? We could do that. So it's a big hubbub of nothing then.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you're just going to see that happen over time. I mean, I think that what you're going to see is you're going to start to see the hardware for mining Bitcoin kind of start to max out. And then at that point, you're basically... your only variable is the cost of energy, and so people are going. It's going to be a race to see who can create the most efficient energy source, and who does it? I don't know, or where does it get done? I don't know, but it'll probably be China.
Yeah, the China.
So we'll see.
A lot of energy over there. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good. That puts me at a. At ease, not because I give a shit about the environment, actually because I've been trying to fry the environment as much as I can, so that will be mining more, frankly.
Good.
But there is this weird esoteric core. I don't know if I can illustrate this in a way that I don't even know if it makes sense to me, but there's this weird esoteric war going on between cryptocurrency or, Bitcoin, but I don't want to just say Bitcoin in one sense. Bitcoin in a few senses, the blockchain, the community, the paper, in all those senses, like there's this big hidden war going on between that one thing and the entire rest of the world,
yes.
Every established yeah. system. And it is amazing how I guess the internet was a similar technology to this that paradigm shifts stuff.
Yes.
But it's really interesting how I think my major concern, Carr, is that we don't get to the point of managing to create this energy system before there's enough of a hubbub about it for some annoying incident to occur. I don't think it threatens cryptocurrency or the planet really at all, but that there would be a big hubbub about it and just make things difficult for everybody. Oh, you can't buy it without reporting, whatever. You know what I mean? Just that's all I'm really concerned about, is that there's going to be yet another wall placed in the way.
Oh yeah.
That you'd have to look out for. And so that's okay. So you say, so yeah. Do you know of what they would do first? Do you see anything down the line? Has there been any chitterings in the Bitcoin community about what the environmental movement within the government would try and do?
I think everybody in the in the know in the government knows the environmental stuff is kind of bullshit. It's only valued to them. It's only a value to them to the extent that they can leverage it to separate other people from their Bitcoins and get them for themselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they could leverage that. I think they're going to use other things. Or, you know, I don't know.
It wouldn't be too hard to have some type of cooperation between the often monopolized energy providers. I mean, every locality has one energy provider, like Eversource, National Grid, whatever. Have them log data for power usage per home. If they notice a large spike, like say a mining center or any type of data center in a residential property, they could then cooperate with the tech companies to investigate if you're a crypto enthusiast, and then use that.
Dude, that's so... I was trying to explain that, but I didn't know the words, and I wanted to go, you know, like they did, like during the drug war when they would like check your energy to see if you were growing pot in the basement. Like we're now, yeah, now, I mean, we get to have the pot, but we can't mine the Bitcoin.
Yeah. And that's not to say that's not a black pill. All that means is that people are going to look for alternative sources of energy, like say your place of work.
Yeah. I mean,
every work has an open Wi-Fi.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this is I think a lot of this is going to move to more commercial mining, regardless.
Just because
the economies of scale, and I think what you're just going to see is a bidding war for commercial miners to come to your country. So it's not who cares? I mean, like the loser. It's quickly going to become evident on an international scale. I think in the next 5 years, that the people that clamp down on mining are going to be the losers. You're going to see absolute game changing wealth come to countries that say, come mine here. And, it's not going to be, I think that you're going to see it come to loggerheads very soon in the next couple of years. And then at some point that dam's going to break. They're like, okay, just come here. Mine. Fine. You know, and I think
that's how usually most of these cat in the bag situations seem to go.
Yep,
right.
Yep. So right now,
and then that opens the possibility for state actors to actually embrace.
And I think they will. And I think a lot already have clandestinely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have to start considering what it means to call somebody a state actor under those circumstances.
Well, that's an interesting question in itself, right? I mean, that's a really interesting
maybe
question.
Maybe we could talk about that, Carr, on my show at some point. Mm-hmm. The three of us can get together, because I've been reading this cryptocurrent thing by Nick Land, who is a big weirdo. All he does is write really weird, like the way he writes is very weird. He's taken crypto, specifically Bitcoin. I think he's considers himself a maximalist. Certainly he talks like one. And the way he talks about Bitcoin is it illustrates, like, it's good to paint a portrait in your head of if this thing was an animal, what it's doing, what it's like doing to its environment around it. And it's interesting, like, if you can now consider the political actor, but talk about it like that, like, what is the political actor even look like? Because, I mean, we all know, like, it's not the we're not all Marxists here. It's not just the financial system that holds the whole superstructure together. I do think there's cultural elements to it. And I wonder, you know, what's really interesting is, does state actor simply become media influencer if money and control in that sense are no longer at play?
Yeah, I mean,
if it does, we cannot, either we cannot call ourselves anarchists in that world, or we got to really start to retool that useful word, because now we're going state actors or anybody who has large scale influence. Well,
that's anarchist tough. With no adjectives thing goes away.
Yeah, well, I think anarchist might too, that's what I'm saying, is unless we start to, and of course labels aren't super useful, but it's fun to imagine, since everything is being impacted, how you can't even really use that term in the classical sense if we're taking the monetary system out of the question. And it's just a matter of charisma and access. So at that point, we're dealing with a very strange world where we're going, the state actor is Walter Cronkite. He is the primary state actor. There doesn't have to be anybody behind him.
I think to some degree, and this is super abstract and it's almost difficult to like think about, but I think you do have to redefine. It's not like we just take our current world and then say, okay, now we have sound stateless money. Right. And everything continues to
change.
It's
going to
change a lot of stuff. Yeah, and I think I know that non-Bitcoiners get a little bit tired. Even I get a little bit tired of Bitcoiners talking about low time preference and like how everything's going to change. We're all going to, you know, live on a farm and yada, yada, yada. And go back to listening to classical music or whatever it is. But I think, you know, I think that there is a pretty tremendous change you're going to see, if you were to just take a walk chronologically back 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, and look at the localization of a lot of the media if you were to walk back in time. And, you know, particularly as you guys know, what's close to my heart is something like community radio. I think you probably are not going to see as much of these kind of dopes on a major scale. Maybe I'm wrong about that. This is optimistic thinking, but I think that you're going to see a lot more localism and community oriented, and that community may not be physically defined, but community.
Are you oriented. is that a result of the time preference to you?
I think it's a result of the. Yeah, at its core, but other reasons too. I think, but it's time preference, but it's also lack of regulation. So you know the reason that everybody tunes into Walter Cronkite is because of a monopoly on media by the FCC.
That's true, because nowadays media corps are suffering to Joe Rogan.
Right. Yeah, and you see, as soon as we technologically broke the monopoly, nobody fucking tunes into these people anymore. I mean, look at their
rating. No.
I mean, Rogan has more listeners than...
And there you go. How interesting is that? The minute they put an interesting guy up there, well, all we do is watch.
Yeah, so...
It's funny, like, when Trump is there, now we're all glued to it and going, like, looking at it going, please, the next storyline, please.
Right.
So, that's got to be the mechanism. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I think you're just going to see a pretty tremendous shift overall, not just in the fact that it's not like you just swap out sound stateless money in our current society and current society rolls on. You know, you have room for exploration. I mean, people are attracted to interesting things. And in a world without... oppressive regulations and things like that, people do interesting things. And people like to tell stories. And people like to tell stories about interesting things. And people like to listen to those stories about interesting things. And you look at some of the stuff that was on community radio and pirate radio, it was really interesting. And then it just got whitewashed, you know? And I think that you would see a return to that. And again, in some sort of competitive market action where you know, communities aren't necessarily physically defined. But we certainly roll back to something that rhymes with that, I would say.
Well, ever the optimist. Ever the optimist.
You know what
I mean? I want to angle it and I go, well, okay, I agree with... Okay, so Carr, at some point that's going to happen. It has to, just because there's no way to really stop the Bitcoin. So you're going to have to sort of change the world to the, like, we could do an easy prediction. But a little part of me wants to go, we all know that the power holders in society, as they lose power, this is thank you, Lenin, they fight harder until the point at which they totally lose power. And so maybe what we're beginning to see is, since access and, well, maybe not access so much, because people can still control that with big data, but... the monetary system is out now, so I think big data's probably, they're going to start using big data even more to, like, pre-regulate you, kind of try and control your decision-making before you actually see a decision presented. Mm-hmm. And I think also you're going to see a much bigger uptick in emotional leverage being used by exact mainstream media people who, like, that is all they have is, because even you said it, people are attracted to interesting things.
Yep.
Now, Nick Land brings that similar point up when he's talking about how Bitcoin is sort of objective truth. It's hard to argue with the fact that it presents an objective truth scenario.
Yeah.
And he's basically like, well, one of the ways that you fight this is that you stop using truth as a metric and you just sort of scare the shit out of people, or you fascinate them, you put them under a spell, and then you can kind of keep the control. Ultimately, I think everybody agrees that does not hold for eternity.
No.
I don't think anybody thinks it does. But I think, I don't know, I like to imagine what the worst possible case until the best case is. And I think you're going to start to see some increased media manipulation, as we've seen already. And then you're going to see a lot more access controls, like they have social credit system in China, I think is going to be one measure that they're going to have to implement to kind of attempt to keep things under control.
Absolutely, no doubt. I agree with you. I think that, you know, I can't remember if I said this on the podcast, but I'm sure I've said it before. Like I, you know, before Bitcoin wins, they will convince you that Bitcoin literally killed your parents. Like, I mean, they are going to pull out all of the stops, I think. Now, one other interesting thing about this is, because in some sense, this is a game of musical chairs. The last person to sit down is going to get screwed.
yeah.
And so Pierre Richard, tweeted this out the other day, and it was like a fascinating thing to think about. He was saying how commercial banks are starting to actually turn and love Bitcoin because of the central bank's interest in CBDC, central bank digital currencies. Why? Because the writing's on the wall for them. If central banks come out with CBDCs, what is the use of a commercial bank? Nothing. They get cut out.
Yeah.
So there's all, it's not as simple. It's, you know, it's very easy to come up with like a spooky piece of FUD, you know, and just be like, oh, you know, like this is going to happen or something like that. But when you really dive in and say, okay, well, what is this actor going to do in this scenario? What is this actor going to do in this scenario? It gets a little bit more murky. And the more I see these bigger entities starting to adopt, the more intertwined Bitcoin becomes in our financial society, I guess would be a way to put it, the more that the powers that be are going to have to move mountains to illegalize it or something like that. It's just going to become very, very difficult.
It's funny how the blockchain, its very principle is playing out socially, like you just explained. That's one of those world-changing things. Like, the blockchain is the thing that the farther you proceed down it, the harder it is to do back.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny how, like, as you integrate a meme or a cultural thing into society that people really like, same thing with the internet, as it rolls out, it becomes increasingly difficult to roll back. It's very interesting that's how you know it's a big deal, because it has that feature.
Right. And the other corollary back to, like, blockchain or proof of work, I was thinking, I tweeted this out too, was that the very thing that proof of work solved, which was the Byzantine generals problem, and trusting other actors in an environment where you shouldn't trust anyone, is the thing that's going to make Bitcoin win over the world's governments, is because they don't trust don't trust each other, and Bitcoin has thing that they don't have, trust in a trustless environment. We can find truth in the UTXO set. They can't trust each other. So Bitcoiners all around the globe, through the software, can trust each other and work together. Governments can't. That's a pretty interesting thing.
Man, I was reading not to take us completely off, but you used the word trust. So I was reading about, I'm doing this thing on my own where I'm trying to build out this little idea of what the most technocratic dystopian society that you could think of, what it would look like. And so one of the things that I'm doing to take inspiration to try and build that is I'm literally looking at China's social credit system.
Yeah.
And so what is very interesting is, so trust seems like a base, right? The idea of trust. I want to trust my neighbor, otherwise I would rather live alone. If you have trust, you build society. The more trust, the better the society. More society trusts one another. More they feel that if I do this good thing, I will be rewarded for it, whether or not someone sees. Usually the better people seem to behave. Now, China's social credit system, it has a few catchphrases. You know how sometimes there's a government program and they'll be like, for a better tomorrow.
Yeah, you know how
they do stuff like that? Well, China's has one. China's, the social credit system actually has a phrase, and I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
It goes like this. This is what they believe the social credit system does. A holistic assessment for the building of a high trust society. So the social credit system, of course, is basically you report someone on your phone if they're misbehaving or they're doing something you don't like, and it affects your credit score. And it's based on trust. The number, how you behave, as in how you are controlled. For example, if you're in a skate park, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a demotion. Just being in a skate park in China, you can be demoted. They don't like skate parks, so they try and disincentivize with social credit. So that's one example, right? So the interesting thing there is that means, under the logic of the social credit system and what they're trying to teach, is if you skate, you are not trustworthy.
Mm.
So the idea is, It's not if you skate, you're out of line with us as a society. You know, you don't vibe with us. You probably don't like the same music or the same food. You probably don't salute. You know, it's you can't be trusted.
Right.
So they take the how you behave in your own time to enjoy yourself, and they equate that to how you would act in the larger society, which is of course crazy. But the point being, it's all buttressed on trust, which is a thing that everybody wants. They want to be able to trust their neighbors. So this is the angle in America, is what I'm trying to say. Is there's in two decades probably or less. I mean, it only the social credit system, ladies and gentlemen, has existed. Do you know what year it was first implemented? 2017. So it has not even been anywhere near 10 years. I was going to say 2 decades, and this will be in America. Hadn't even been 1 decade since it's been in China. And it is efficient, and it works, and people cannot get on airplanes or go on trains if they have too low of a score, and they have to perform tasks for the government in order to remit their low score. You have to pick up trash, or you have to go to classes in order to be reformed. This is going to be the mechanism that fights cryptocurrency in the meanwhile. I'm 100% sure of it. Is there's going to be an alternate behavior system that they try and put together? And the most logical thing that's probably going to happen is people are going to be living 2 different lives for a while. But I think that is, if you're an American or if you're in the Western world and you're curious if cryptocurrency is an imminent threat to the current world, then the current world is going to be fighting against it. That's how, or at least that's what I'm calling.
Yeah, I could see a type of fusion between Fortune 500 companies that would be the spearhead of that kind of system, and as well as their adoption of cryptocurrency. So the inherent trust of the system, of the blockchain, matches that of society. And it, the anonymity and the pseudonymity that comes with Bitcoin, which is why we like it, we're pretty much going to just police ourselves, because we'll be, subjected to, do I want to be able to buy Starbucks? Do I want to be able to get on a plane? Do I want to?
Yeah.
So you will naturally use cryptocurrency, even though you could use it for bad things. There's nothing stopping you from. You will naturally want to, use it for approved things.
That's what I think the other. Yeah, I agree. If they wanted to try and control it, they would just try and make it so that the things that you want to spend it on are the things that they want you to spend it on, like the stimulus check. Like how they were like, let's keep people in the fucking house forever and rob them of their jobs, and then we'll give them money because we know they'll immediately spend it, which is what most people did. Mm-hmm. And maybe if too many of us think about
doing something about being locked in our house, maybe we don't get those stimulus checks.
Right.
No, you just get a rubber bullet to the back of the neck.
Yeah.
And then you die, and conservatives go, he had a gun on him, and then they don't find a gun. Actually, they find a gun in your neighbor's backyard that's registered in his name.
Yeah.
And they say you had it.
He was near.
And also there was PCP on you.
Yeah, also this bag of PCP that I just found.
Just neatly sprinkled on your collar.
But I've never had a negative toxicology report ever. Well, it doesn't matter. You must be doing PCP. I don't know. It's crazy.
That's just how a PCP addict would test in a toxicology report.
I'm a lawyer. I'm a lawyer. I have to take a drug test every month. I've never failed one. Well, you must have started PCP very recently then.
Very.
Speaking of which, I could fucking take a hit of angel dust right now.
Yeah, is that?
You want to go in the back alley?
Well, let's.
Actually, the bathroom's closer.
We'll get.
Yeah, really using Denny's for all it's worth, huh? You'll probably have to wait. There's probably someone in there doing it already.
I'll go first. Oh, sorry, I'll see you guys back at the studio. Bye.
Man, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
I never liked him.
Glad he's out of here. All right. You want to wrap this up so we can do some angel dust and get the hell out of here?
Yeah. Thank you all for listening, and keep 2 hands on the wheel.
You dick.
What? Thank you.